Hello there, and welcome to episode number 100 of Blue Jays World Update. I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and let's get you up to date. Okay, so first things first, episode 100, it's pretty crazy. You know, when I first started this podcast, I didn't really know what to expect. I surely didn't think I would record 100 of these episodes. So, you know, it's a pretty cool and special milestone for me personally and for my career as well. And I just wanted to say a special thank you to all of you who've been listening along the way and for everyone that's joined throughout this journey as well. So let's keep it going. Let's do 100 more. And let's start with this one here. And it starts with us talking about the Blue Jays taking 2 out of 3 games over the Baltimore Orioles over the weekend. Pretty successful series for the Blue Jays, all things considered. You know, you're coming off that 11-0 blowout to the Rays, beginning a huge series against the Orioles, which, you know, if it went successful, which it did, you could basically knock the Orioles out of the playoff race. And that's pretty much exactly what the Blue Jays did after taking 2 out of 3 against the Orioles, because now where things stand on September 19th, the Orioles are 4 games back of that third wild card spot, and they're chasing the Seattle Mariners right now, who, you know, they have a pretty favorable schedule down the stretch, thanks to the fact that they play in the AL West, where they get to beat up on the Oakland Athletics. They also play the Royals and the Tigers, I believe, as well. I think they have a series mixed in against the Angels in there somewhere as well down the stretch. So, you know, they're pretty well positioned to fend off the Orioles at this point. And, you know, I think reality is catching up a little bit to Baltimore in the sense that, you know, they were never really a legitimate playoff contender. They've had a nice season. It's been a solid building block for the Orioles and their franchise, but they're not at that level where the Mariners, the Rays, and the Blue Jays are. They're just not. That's reality. And so, you know, 2022 has been a nice story for the O's. They got some nice young pieces coming along in Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, some pitchers that are coming up, and their prospect system is rich with talent. So, you know, there are more coming, especially someone like Grayson Rodriguez. He's a pitcher that once he comes up and establishes himself at the major league level, if he stays healthy, he's going to give the Blue Jays and the rest of the division fits over the next number of years. So, you know, the Orioles aren't going anywhere, unfortunately, as painful as that is to say from a Blue Jays standpoint, because of the sudden rivalry that has been built over the last few seasons between Toronto and Baltimore. You know, I envision that continuing to brew and gain steam over these next few seasons as both teams, you know, continue to, you know, traject upwards, especially, you know, the O's, considering where they were and the fact that they lost over 100 games a season ago. Like, that's a pretty rapid improvement going from losing over 100 games in 2021 to fast forward to 2022. They're going to finish well above 500. And yet they're still probably going to finish fourth in the division, which is crazy, but that's just the AL East and how ridiculously stacked it is. But, you know, for the Blue Jays, taking 2 out of 3, you took care of business against a team, against a division rival that you should beat. And because of it, the Blue Jays have positioned themselves fairly decent here, heading into Monday's off day with 19 games remaining. They're currently 83-64. They're 5.5 games back at the New York Yankees, which is somewhat notable considering you have that final 3-game series next week against the Yankees, which, you know, if the Blue Jays continue to gain ground on the Yankees and get that gap from 5.5 to, say, you know, under 3, possibly, by the start of that series, they could conceivably catch the Yankees. But regardless, at the moment, they're currently sitting atop of the wild card race in that one seed, currently holding a half game lead over the Rays. So, you know, it goes without saying that the upcoming series against Tampa Bay down in the Trop, which is a 4-game set, is going to be pivotal. And then you combine that with the fact that you have that 3-game series against the Yankees right after, and you don't get a day off in between. It's huge. Like, these next 2 weeks are going to determine where the Blue Jays are going to be seated come playoff time. No doubt in my mind. Because, you know, you got that mini 2-game set against the Phillies coming up here beginning on Tuesday. And then the really hard stuff begins, where you got 4 against the Rays, 3 against the Yankees. Then you get an off day and you round out the regular season with 3 against the Red Sox and 3 against the Orioles. Hopefully those last 6 games really don't hold much merit in terms of seeding. But they very well could, especially if, you know, things don't go well during that 7-game stretch against the Rays and the Yankees. So, you know, these last 19 games, every single one of them, or at least the next 13, are going to be really, really important for the Blue Jays. So it'll be very interesting to see how all this plays out. But if we take a look back at that finale against the Orioles, where, you know, unfortunately, it was a game the Blue Jays could have won, but they kind of pissed it away at the end. And ultimately, Jordan Romano earned his 5th blown save of the season, though it was his first since August 7th. So, you know, it had been over a month since he had blown a save. And it seems, too, like there's no cause for concern, to me at least, about Jordan Romano's ability to pitch in high leverage situations down the stretch. You know, he's been dominant all season long, easily one of the best closers in the league, arguably the second best behind New York's Edwin Diaz. But on Sunday, he didn't really have the command of his slider, which has quickly become a much larger pitch for him over the last few months. Because early on in the season, even first half, you know, Romano was more a lot of fastballs, you know, used the slider around 30-40%. But he's kind of flipped the script and almost gone slider dominant since the start of August. And when he's not at his best, it's usually because, at least as of late, that he doesn't have the control of a slider. And it seemed like that was evident on Sunday when, you know, he allowed a pair of walks against his slider. And then the Orioles lineup were basically able to eliminate one of Romano's best pitches in his slider. And that basically allowed them to sit on his fastball. And that's how, you know, they were able to rattle off 4 hits against Romano, 3 runs ultimately, and it turned out to be the difference in the game. But, you know, unless this becomes a recurring theme where Romano can't control his slider, which hasn't really been the case this season, you know, there have been small instances where when Romano has blown a save, it's because, largely at least, that he hasn't had the control of his slider. You know, in 3 of the 5 blown saves that have occurred against him, he's allowed 2 walks or more in each of those blown saves. So, you know, that might be something, at least a minor situation that might warrant keeping a close eye on. You know, like, if there's been one flaw to Jordan Romano's season this year, it's been the fact that he has been susceptible to allowing hard contact at times, and has been bailed out by, you know, quality defense behind him, and the fact that he can strike out hitters like crazy. But overall, I am not overly concerned, or if all concerned at all, about Romano's ability to continue to close games for the Blue Jays. And you know, the thing is too, even if Romano fell into any sort of slump, let's say, knock on wood that it doesn't happen, especially at this point of the season, but even if that were to happen, obviously it would be a big blow to the Blue Jays bullpen, but at the same time as well, they could conceivably go to Jimmy Garcia or Anthony Bass to try and get a save in a pinch, you know? When say in the playoffs, when you're only worrying about that one game, if you needed to go to somebody else aside from Romano to get a save, Jimmy Garcia has already done that previously this season. Anthony Bass has prior history of closing out games in high leverage spots in big games as well. So, you know, it's always nice to have alternative options down there. You obviously hope that nothing extended carries from this blown save from Romano, but at the end of the day too, the Blue Jays have backup plans just in case if that does happen. But again, they have one of the best closers in the game, and to me, I'm not concerned about his status moving forward. Now, one of the big reasons why the Blue Jays were able to knock off the Orioles and have performed so well in September, one, it's because of Bo Bichette, and he's arguably been the hottest hitter in baseball this month. But the bottom of the lineup for the Blue Jays has been extremely productive over the last 2-3 weeks as well. And that's been a huge difference maker. You know, you have Ramil Tapia's base clearing double in Saturday's game, which gives them a lot more breathing room and ultimately helps them take the second game of that 3-game series. And then as well, Danny Jansen has been extremely productive all season long, even though he's battled injuries. He's battled the oblique injury, the broken bone in his hand earlier as well. Like, he's only played 59 games this season. That's kind of hard to believe that, you know, he's been so injury plagued that he really hasn't been able to get on the field all that much. But when he has, especially as of late, he's been phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. Like, since August 25th, he's been lights out. Now, granted, he only has 62 plate appearances since August 25th. But he's hitting 377, 468, 679. He's got 4 home runs, 9 RBIs, a 225 weighted runs created plus score, a 302 isolated power, and a 372 BAP. And to top things off, he's walking more than he's striking out as well. He's got 8 walks to just 6 strikeouts. He's also got a hit by pitch in there as well. He's got a stolen base. He's hitting a ton of hard contact at 55.3%. He's got a barrel rate of 10.6%. Not hitting many ground balls, just at a 29.8% clip. He's got a 25.5% line drive rate and a 44.7% fly ball percentage. He's creating a ton of power to the pull side, which was his main goal of the season. Like, he's been phenomenal all year for the Blue Jays. Again, when he's been able to get on the field and stay there, he's been a huge difference maker for the Blue Jays. And, you know, despite being a part-time player, you know, like basically the backup catcher, if you want to call it that, if you want to put a name on it. But despite the limited at-bats, like he only has 201 plate appearances this year, but you know, he only had 205 a year ago, and he's been far better than last season. And you know, this is without question the best year of his career. Again, overlooking the injuries, statistically speaking, Jansen hasn't had a better season than this current one. You know, like he's got 13 home runs on the season. That's tied for a career best. He's slashing 251, 328, 503. He's got a 133 weighted runs created plus score. That's a career best. He's got a 354 WOBA. That's a career best. He's got a 368 expected WOBA. That's a career best. He's got a 1.9 Fangraphs WAR rating. That's a career best. His offensive rating is at 7.3. That's a career best. You know, like, just unbelievable results from him when he's been on the field. His plate discipline has also been extremely impressive as well. 16.4% strikeout rate this season. That's a career best. His walk to strikeout ratio is at 0.58. That's a career best. Like, just blown away by what he's been able to accomplish at this stage of his career after battling multiple injuries as well and missing so much time, right? Like, Danny Jansen caught fire in the opening series of the season and then went down with that oblique injury. We didn't see him for like a month or so. And then, you know, it takes him some time to get back into the routine of things, just like we saw with Teoscar Hernandez after he came back from his oblique injury. And then once Danny Jansen starts finding his groove again, he gets a hit by pitch on his hand, breaks a bone. Luckily, he doesn't miss a ton of time because that was a previous injury that he had experienced, and he still had a plate in his hand that helped keep things in place, and he didn't have to have surgery to reposition bones in his hand. So you know, luckily that didn't sideline him for too long. But again, once he came back, took him a little bit of time to get his timing back, to get into the groove of things at the plate. And now, I mean, he's reaping the rewards of his success once again. And it couldn't be coming at a better time for the Blue Jays, because again, this is the most critical time of the year. And you combine the production that you're receiving from Alejandro Kirk, and the catcher position has just been phenomenal for the Blue Jays. You know, like, aside from having to use Zach Collins and Tyler Heineman for a bit, again, due to the injuries to Danny Jansen, Gabby Moreno came up for a bit and looked well at times. And obviously, he's probably the catcher of the future if he stays on this team long term. But you can't complain about the production that you've been receiving from Danny Jansen. And, you know, for a guy who's 27 now, like I said, he's basically a backup catcher at this point. Guys love throwing to him, though, by the way. You know, like, talk to Hyunjin Ryu or any other pitcher that has thrown to Danny Jansen. They'll rave of how he calls a game. And, you know, that's rare in this age where, you know, you find a quality defensive catcher who can provide you some upside offensively. Obviously, with Kirk, you know, he's a great offensive player. And he's a phenomenal framer, especially at pitches low in the strike zone. But, you know, for a guy of his stature, using him, maybe not on an everyday basis, but we saw earlier this season when Kirk had to catch more, it took a toll on him. You know, the numbers didn't really show it just because he was so hot in the first half. But it caught up with him a little bit in the second half between, you know, catching as much as he has, especially with Jansen missing time. The fact that the Blue Jays had to keep him in the lineup basically every day because he was hitting so well. He was their best hitter without question in the first half. And then you have him going to the All-Star game and the festivities there. And again, that's, you know, that's not really a break, you know, during those times, especially for a catcher, right? So, I don't know if Kirk would ever admit this, but it seemed like he was getting tired early on in the second half, and that's probably why he struggled a fair bit out of the All-Star break. He's picked it up lately, but, you know, again, you pair what Kirk gives you with what Danny Jansen is giving you right now, and it's just, it's a luxury. It's a luxury not many teams have, you know, like, you look at, say, the New York Yankees. Let's use them as an example. They don't get a whole lot of offensive production from their catcher position, right? With Jose Trevino and Kyle Higashioka, like, they've sacrificed offense for defense, and at a catcher position, you have to do that at times. But for the Blue Jays, they really haven't. They've been kind of getting the best of both worlds, and that doesn't even factor into what Gabby Moreno could give you in the future. So I've been really impressed with Danny Jansen all year, and, you know, he is a good guy, right? You root for, he's a very easy guy to root for, and the fact that he's having success at this point of the season has been massive for the Blue Jays, and you just hope that he's able to continue it, and more so, you hope that he's able to stay healthy, because that's been his biggest issue over the last few years. Now, somebody else who is quietly performing decent, let's say, is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. No, like, Vladdy's gotten a lot of heat, and rightly so, over his 2022 season. You know, like, it hasn't been what most fans have expected, just because of how dominant Vladdy was a year ago, right? He finished as the runner-up for the AL MVP next to Shohei Ohtani. So, you know, everyone thought and hoped that Vladdy would somehow replicate his results from a season ago, and considering how good his results were last season, that's just, it's very difficult, especially for a younger hitter, to just say, okay, I'm going to replicate exactly what I did a year ago, because pitchers adjust to you, right? And we've seen that all season long, where, you know, pitchers are throwing Vlad, have pitched Vladdy all season, low and away. And when they come in, it's usually a mistake. And, you know, Vladdy hasn't really capitalized on those mistakes compared to as much as he did last season. But right now, he's currently riding a 12-game hitting streak. Again, he's still not completely right at the plate. And I talked about this a little bit in my last episode, in that, you know, Vladdy is still chasing a lot at the plate, and he's doing basically the same during this 12-game hitting streak, where his chase rate is sitting at 45.3%. That's almost half the time. Almost half the time, Vladdy is swinging outside the strike zone during his at-bats. And that's just not a recipe for success, because, like we've seen over these last few weeks, pitchers are going to keep trying to expose that weakness, where they're going to keep pitching you low and away, and hope that you extend the strike zone. And Vladdy's been willing to do so recently. So not only is he struggling to get the ball off the ground, but he's struggling to force pitchers in the strike zone too. And because Vladdy is as talented as he is, he can be going through all these struggles and still be riding a 12-game hitting streak where he's slashing 333, 370, 549 with a 163 weighted runs created plus score. Like, he's that good that he can be struggling but still producing those numbers. You know, like, that's just that is how talented Vladdy is. Now, we also have to remember, and I can't emphasize this enough, that Vladdy is 23 years old, and this is really like his second full season in the majors, right? Because 2019, he came up later on just because of service time manipulation and his quote-unquote hamstring injury, I believe the Blue Jays called it back then in 2019. But you have the 2020 shortened season, which was a disaster for Vladdy, and he admitted it so at the end of the year. Then you have last season and this year. Like, this is basically his second full season in the majors. So, you know, that's usually a big adjustment period for most rookies, or not rookies, but young major leaguers, where, you know, it's not so much of a sophomore slump. Because, you know, you look at Vladdy's overall numbers, like, they're not as good, obviously, as 2021, but you can't necessarily say it's been a disappointment. Like, he has a 137 weighted runs created plus score on the season through 146 games. Like, even though he hasn't been the, you know, unworldly, you know, phenomenal hitter, one of the best players in the league, he's still been 37% better than league average. You know, so but I think as well, and I don't want to go too far down the road here, but this may make, like, Vladdy's 2022 season just might make it a little bit more difficult to find common ground on a future long-term contract extension between him and the Blue Jays, just because Vladdy obviously is not hurting for money, right? He's not one of those young international players who come to North America and, you know, they're really struggling at home, financially at least, where, you know, they jump at the chance to sign a team-friendly contract just because they need that money now, right? Like Ronald Acuna Jr., per se, or Ozzy Albies, right? Crazy team-friendly contracts, and it's where teams are just taking advantage of young players who need that that generational wealth to help them through, you know, what they're going through back home. It's not the same thing with Vladdy. Right, Vladdy's dad played in the majors for a very long time, very successful career. Vladdy's not hurting for money, and you know, he sees the massive contracts that, you know, Fernando Tatis is signing, Julio Rodriguez. You know, like, he's going to be looking for something probably in the $300 million range, and from a value perspective, Vladdy's WAR is at 3.2 this year. Last season was at 6.3. He is a first baseman, so positionally, his value isn't going to be as high as, say, a shortstop or an outfielder, just because of where he plays. So for me personally, looking at the underwhelming, I guess, performance that he's had this year, where he's, you know, fought through his struggles at the plate this year, between the ground balls, between the chases and such, I'd be hesitant to commit to a $300 million contract with Vladdy. Again, because even if he's an above average player, which he's been this year, right? 37% better than league average. Because he plays first base, his value isn't going to even out as much compared to as if, you know, a shortstop had his similar offensive numbers. Then it would even out a little bit more because his value would be higher because he's a shortstop compared to a first baseman. Right, so it's not a conversation that needs to be had today. Obviously, Vladdy's comments recently about being open to a long-term deal with the Blue Jays has sparked the discussion a little bit here. But I think that's more something we need to put a pin in and rediscuss in the off season, you know, specifically more like January, February, which is when the arbitration hearings really start to happen. Because Vladdy's going to be due a pretty hefty pay raise this winter, right? He's probably going to double his salary from this year, probably going to somewhere around $17, $18 million. It's going to start getting a little bit more expensive with Vladdy. And you know, same goes for Bichette, who's nearing arbitration as well. So, you know, we're going to be talking all winter about long-term deals for Vladdy and Bo and potentially Manoah down the line too. I don't think that is something that would happen this winter, but maybe, you know, the off-season of 23-24, that could be where I could see the Blue Jays being interested in signing Manoah long-term, especially because they would have another season's worth of evidence to show whether or not Manoah can stay healthy given how high of a workload he's faced this year. So, but regardless, with Vladdy in particular and where he is right now offensively, you just really hope over these last 2 weeks or so that he's able to break out of his woes when it comes to chasing outside the zone. Because come postseason time, when you're facing the best pitchers in the game, they're going to continue to expose that weakness more than they already are right now. So now is the time where Vladdy really needs to hone into, you know, his mental approach, where he doesn't have to force things as much as he is right now, especially when there are runners on base, because that's when we see Vladdy offer at those pitches even more outside the zone, because it seems as though he's putting too much pressure on himself to deliver in those moments instead of just being patient, taking your walks, letting Bo Bichette come up behind you and drive in those runs. So it's a growing aspect, and I don't doubt that Vladdy will eventually come to that understanding. But for now, it's just taking time, and you just hope that it comes sooner rather than later. And somebody else who's struggling right now at the plate is Teoscar Hernandez, who, you know, it's been a very tricky season for Teoscar. Again, that oblique injury early on really hurt him because he was hitting pretty well out of the gate. And it seemed like he was possibly going to, you know, start the season extremely well. And then, you know, again, like, that injury sidelined him for close to a month. And it seems like he came back possibly a little too soon. Just because, you know, he wanted to get back and help his teammates on a very important season. But he really struggled out of the gate. And, you know, this month he's not hitting overly well at the moment either. In fact, you know, over his last 16 plate appearances, he has one hit. That's it. Over his last four games, he's got one hit. And it was a single. So, you know, he's really going through tough times right now. He's striking out a bunch. Over his last 16 plate appearances, he's got a 31.3% strikeout rate to a 6.3% walk rate. We can expand this even further, too. We can go all the way back to September 6th. And during that time, Teoscar is 4 for 34, which it results in a 118 batting average, a 167 on base percentage, and a 176 slugging with a -6 weighted runs created plus score. You know, and again, the strikeouts are a big part of it. Since September 6th, he's got a 36.1% strikeout rate to a 5.6% walk rate. And similar to Vladdy, to Teoscar's chasing outside the zone, not as much, but he is striking, he is chasing a fair bit at a 36.4% clip, and he's got a fair amount of swings and misses too. So like, the Blue Jays are doing well despite the fact that, you know, Vladdy's not at his best right now. Teoscar's really going through a slump, and as a result, he's forced his way down in the lineup, which has elevated Matt Chapman, who's swinging the bat extremely well right now. But there's no question, when the Jays go up against the Rays and the Yankees, they need Teoscar Hernandez to be producing. It's just a fact. They are a better team when Teoscar Hernandez is right at the plate. And at the moment, he's not. And he hasn't been for several weeks now. So, you know, strikeouts are obviously always going to be a part of Teoscar's game. But, again, I think the best way for him to start to break out of his current slump is to be more disciplined at the plate. Not chase as much, right? And that's especially when it comes to breaking balls, because those are pitches that when Teoscar is slumping, he will chase outside the zone at them. And pitchers know that too, right? Teoscar's been around for a bit. They know how to attack him. So until he starts to lay off those pitches, these struggles are probably going to continue. So you just hope that things start to click for Teoscar and Vladdy too during those games against the Rays and the Yankees. Because again, it's going to be a lot easier to win those games with Teoscar and Vladdy hitting well and producing. But it is going to be interesting to see how the Blue Jays structure their starting rotation moving forward here. Obviously, the off day on Monday helps, and it'll allow them to go to Ross Stripling and Kevin Gausman in that two-game series against the Phillies, and they can go back to Berríos and Manoah for the first two games against the Rays and allow them to go to a four-man rotation temporarily there. But on the 24th, which is next Saturday, someone other than Berríos, Manoah, Gausman, or Stripling will have to start. And, you know, there's a very good chance that that'll likely be Mitch White, especially because he would be starting that game on 5 days rest because he threw for Buffalo on Sunday. But the only thing is, that performance didn't go so well for Mitch White. You know, he struggled through five innings with the Bisons, and he allowed 9 hits, 8 runs, a walk, a pair of home runs. He did have 2 strikeouts, however. But the problem is, this is a big game. Like, those 7 games against the Rays and the Yankees, like, you can't afford to throw one of those games away by starting Mitch White or going with a bullpen day. The problem is, though, those are really the only options the Blue Jays have. And the good news is, they only have to go to either Mitch White or a bullpen day 2 more times this season. That's it. All the other games can be started by one of the big four. So, you know, depending on how the next 4 games go, the Blue Jays could go with a mix of Mitch White and a bullpen day, which I think that's probably the best approach to have. It's not ideal, obviously, because you're going to go a 9-game stretch without an off day. So, you know, if you burn through your bullpen midway through that stretch, things could be difficult for you during that 3-game series against the Yankees. So it's not ideal, but again, you don't really have any alternatives aside from Mitch White and using your bullpen. So hopefully Mitch White has better command of his pitches in that start on Saturday, particularly the command of his four-seamer and his slider, because those are, you know, the two big pitches for him. The Blue Jays are trying to get him to use his changeup more, but that seems like that's something that he's going to have to continue to work on over the offseason and look to make progress with next season. But in the short term here, the Blue Jays are going to have to go with what they have. And hopefully that's a game where their offense can provide a ton of support for Mitch White in the bullpen, because that would make things a lot easier on everyone, particularly John Schneider and the coaching staff. But, you know, we'll see what happens. Like, again, it's something the Blue Jays are only going to have to worry about on the 24th and October 4th. Those are the only two games where somebody other than the Big Four are going to have to pitch. But with the 24th in particular, like, you just hope that you can win the first two games, because if you lose that third game of the series, it won't hurt as much compared to as if you split or drop the first two. But again, I have a feeling it's going to come down to the offense and how much support they can give their pitching staff on that day. But it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be easy to do that against the Rays pitchers too, because, you know, aside from Drew Rasmussen, the Blue Jays kind of struggle against pretty much everyone else on the Rays staff. So it's going to be a challenge. But at the same time too, it's going to be basically playoff baseball. You know, like, you get through those two games against the Phillies, you got seven straight playoff-esque games. And every single one is going to be really meaningful in the standings. You know, like, if you can win 3 out of 4 against the Rays, you can continue to build that gap between the first and second seeds in the wild card race. And, you know, it would be an extra bonus if you could gain some games on the Yankees during that stretch as well, and really put yourself in a strong position to make a competitive run at the division. Because, you know, if the Yankees lose some games here this week and the Blue Jays trim that deficit below 3, they have a realistic chance to win the division. And, you know, a month or two ago, no one would have been saying that. So it's a really interesting development that I hope continues to get tighter as we inch closer to the end of the regular season. But that does it for this week's episode. I hope all of you will join me next time for another edition of Blue Jays World Update. But until that time, I'm your host, Thomas Hall, and now you're up to date. And please remember, wear a mask, wear it properly, and get vaccinated. Thanks for listening.